The fact that now interracial couples can marry legally throughout the United States without risking imprisonment is thanks to a controversial suit that changed U.S. law in June 12, 1967. Writer-director Jeff Nichols has portrayed the couple behind the case in a powerful new feature film called Loving, which opens next Friday the 4th. And he joins us now along with Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga, who play Richard and Mildred Loving in the film. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
When and how did all of you first learn about the Loving lawsuit?
Well, I learned about it in 2012 when I was approached to do this film. The producers,
but you hadn't heard about them before?
Hadn't heard about them before, and that was actually part of the calculus in taking on the job. I wondered why had I not heard this? Why is this not on the lips of every American?
Well, in the case of you, Ruth, and you, Joel, you are not native-born Americans. So would this story have even been, would you even have known about this story when you were growing up?
I first learned about it through Jeff and his interest in making the project. I thought I was off the hook being Australian, that I didn't, you know, it wasn't a bad thing that I didn't know about. The one thing I was surprised is just how many people in America don't know about Richard and Mildred.
Yeah.
I found out about Richard and Mildred the same way Nancy Bersky did, who...
She made a documentary.
She did, yes. She made the Loving story for HBO. I happened upon Mildred Loving's obituary in 2008. And I was quite surprised when I read about what she and Richard had achieved. I was quite surprised that I hadn't known about them beforehand.
Jeff, you come from Little Rock, Arkansas.
I do.
Were there similar miscegenation laws in your home state?
There were. You know, in 1958, when they were married, I believe there were 24 states. By the time the court case came down in 67, I believe there were 16 states. I think I got that math right. I wasn't aware, though, of even the concept.
As late as 1967, we already have the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, Brown versus the Board of Education, you know. And I went to high school at Little Rock Central High. I graduated in 97, 40 years after the 57 desegregation crisis. I felt like I had a pretty solid knowledge of civil rights history in this country, but not this.
You've written and directed all of your movies. Isn't this the first one that's based on real life situation and real people?
It is. It is. The other four are cut from whole creative cloth.
So is it a very different process?
Yes and no. It's different in the sense that you're not creating it. You're doing research instead, and you're trying to lay out the facts that as you see them, as you can find them and discover them, in a way that then does start to overlap and dovetail with the other type of the process, the creative part of the process.
What made you decide to take it on?
You know, I say this, it's going to sound hyperbolic, but I think this is one of the greatest love stories in American history.
And this is a feature film. As Ruth pointed out, there was a documentary, a Peabody Award-winning documentary called The Loving Story by Ruth Bersky.
Nancy Bersky.
Mm-hmm. But you weren't going to just do the same thing that the documentary did.
No, the documentary does something interesting in the back third. It downshifts into the court case. Which is fascinating, and I recommend anybody, you know, go see the documentary and go find out about it. But the day-to-day technicalities of how those lawyers got the court case to the Supreme Court didn't really involve the Lovings' day-to-day life. And when I finished that documentary, I knew I wanted to be with them, and I wanted to stay with their point of view, and that started to define the narrative trajectory of the whole thing.
You shot this on location. What was your sense of this town, Ruth?
We did. We shot in and around Bowling Green. It was incredible to film in the actual places where these events took place. We filmed in the courtroom.
Had it changed much? Does anybody know whether it pretty much looks like it did
in 1967? We actually had footage from 65 of the courthouse, and it looked nearly identical.
And then also the jail cell where Mildred spent a weekend?
Yes, it looks pretty much the same as the pictures. It was very moving to be in those places. energetically, I think that there's some sort of residue for that, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And it certainly brought the whole story closer to home.
When people knew that you were shooting a film about the Lovings, did they talk about that? Did they remember the Lovings?
Well, it's one of the other great things about being in the right location is that not just the places speak to you, but the people definitely do. And they come out of everywhere with second-hand tales, or if you're lucky, first-hand tales. And look, you know, I think everybody was proud. Definitely the state of Virginia, who you know, are very progressive now, were very interested to welcome us back. And individuals who had experiences or had stories to tell us. And none more important than Peggy herself, who was Richard and Mildred's daughter.
Now, she is the only survivor of this family?
Yes, Donald and Sidley have passed.
The other children have died?
Mm. Yeah.
And was Peggy on the set?
She was, yeah. She was around. She visited semi-regularly. She was on the carpet the other night at the premiere. She's very proud and, you know, she's a lot like her dad. You know, I play Richard, and Richard was a man of very few words, and like very few. And Peggy's the same. These people that, you know, I always associate with very kind of rural landscapes of places with open spaces that people often communicate with, a lot of open spaces as well. Of you see their mind turning, but they choose very specifically when to talk and what about. But it was great to have her presence there and to have her support felt on set. And I think she felt safe with all of us.
Jeff, how did that affect the way you wrote the screenplay, that these were not especially talkative people, especially Richard?
Well, you know, if you've seen some of my other films, I'm used to Southern men, working class men that don't articulate their emotions or feelings very well. So in a way, I felt very comfortable. I felt like I was kind of in my wheelhouse with these people. But, you know, so often when you're talking about screenwriting, people just think about dialogue. Even when you watch a movie, you wait for the opening credits to finish and you don't really start paying attention until somebody starts talking. That's not really how I tell stories. And I don't think it really reflects behavior appropriately. I see dialogue just the same as action in a script. When someone walks into a room, they start speaking before their mouths open. And that was very much the case with Richard and Mildred, Richard especially. You know, just because there's silence doesn't mean there isn't a lot being said.
Well, when the sound film came in, many people thought that was the end of cinema.
Of course. Of course.
But how did Peggy Loving respond when she wrote your screenplay?
It was a pretty extraordinary moment for me. I went over to her home. She was sitting in a big Lazy Boy, and she...
How old is she now?
Oh, gosh. She was 5 and 67, so I'll let you all do the math. Mm. But...
So she's not that old.
She's not that old,
she's
no.
She's in her 60s.
No. And...
Wait, she's actually in her 50s.
In her 50s, mm. Yeah. So... She has a very stern look on her face, which I'm a filmmaker, so I'm a narcissist, and I was just thinking, oh, she hates it. She hates it. And she's flipping through these pages, but then she looks up, and she had tears in her eyes, and she just said, they're all gone. And it just struck me right through the heart.
I don't want to reveal, although people can probably look it up, just Wikipedia the story.
Yes.
But it comes as a shock when we find out how Richard died at the end of the film.
Yeah.
What kind of research do you do when you're approaching a role like this, Ruth?
Well, Jeff had sent me Nancy's documentary when I before I auditioned, and that has a lot of archival footage of the couple at the time, and that was key in informing my creation of Mildred physically and vocally. So I did a lot of studying for that. But I, you know, when I first read Jeff's script, it really jumped off the page. There's a vitality there that I could see these scenes, because Jeff is a very specific screenwriter, writer. And it really it really resonated with me in a very visceral way. So, you know, I think credit due to Jeff's writing.
And Joel, there were a lot of the couple was a big story at the time. There was a lot of filming of them. There were magazine articles, newspaper articles. Did you try to check out all the archival footage?
Yeah, it became like a complete direct roadmap to how to embody the character physically and vocally. And, you know, interestingly, you know, you only get one part of the picture when you're thinking about archival footage. And there was a lot of extra archival footage that didn't appear in the documentary. So we had lots of stuff. But Richard was so shy, part of the picture, and Mildred was so shy too. Part of the picture is there in the documentary, but what's the other half of the picture when the cameras went away? And amazingly, I think Grey Villette's photographs got closer to the true intimate, private aspects of that couple, because he somehow did what I think are great photographers or document photographers or documentarians can do, which is sort of become part of the wallpaper. And Richard and Mildred somehow, as shy as they were, allowed themselves to go back to that intimate space and be close and touch each other. And some of those photos tell you a lot, even though they're still images. There was a lot to go on.
My guests are Joel Edgerton, who plays Richard Loving, and Ruth Nigger, who plays his wife Mildred Loving in a new film called Loving. And Jeff Nichols, who is the writer and director of the film, which opens next Friday at the AMC Lincoln Square and the Regal Union Square cinemas. Mildred does seem to be a bit more assertive when it comes to trying to work things out. You almost feel at times like she's really the smart one in this couple. Did you think of it in those terms?
Mm-hmm.
I think that she knew that she had to take the lead.
He was reluctant to go to court.
I think they were both reluctant to be in any sort of limelight or have the spotlight put upon them or become spokespeople. So I think she knew quite early on that she would be the one, the propelling force of this case. But I do think she was more than up to the task. Mildred has a beautifully understated self-confidence. And I think that served her well, because this was a 9-year battle and took a lot of energy and perseverance and tenacity. And I think that, that those energies she very much discovered within herself over that time. You know, we often find our mettle in times of stress, and I think that you see her sort of her confidence and her grace under fire sort of unfurl like a jasmine tea, really, across those 9 years. But you know, I think that we associate quietness with being submissive, and I don't think that necessarily applies, and it certainly didn't apply to Mildred or indeed Richard.
Well, what about the casting? We have Ruth here, who's London-based, Joel, who's Australian, although you've worked with him before in films where he did American accents,
right.
And then do you think people will be surprised that one of our next guests, Nick Kroll, is playing the ACLU attorney, Bernard Cohen?
Well, you know, it's funny because the same calculation went into each of these decisions, which, you know, I made a film called Mud, and I wrote a part for Matthew McConaughey, and I really wasn't satisfied until he showed up and started speaking those words. Here I was writing the parts for the real Richard and Mildred, the real Bernard Cohen. That's who I had in my head. Those are the voices that I had in my head.
And you had stuff from the past that allowed you to know how they spoke?
Absolutely. You know, this tremendous amount of archival footage we mentioned from the documentary, these photographs. So when I went out into the world, just to use Nick as an example first, I'm watching his, you know, pretty crazy show on Comedy Central, and I'm just like, wow, he kind of looks like Bernie Cohen. Mm. And then I look at his photo on his IMDb page, and he has these horn-rimmed glasses on. He looks exactly like Bernie Cohen. Then you give him a call, and you find out that his father graduated from Georgetown Law. He went to Georgetown. There are all these things that start to come together, and you realize he's perfect for the part. The same thing happened with Ruth and Joel. These people, these actors, have the facility to embody Richard and Mildred closer than anybody else I could find.
And Joel, you seem to like playing these strong men roles. You were Stanley Kowalski opposite Kate Blanchett in The Streetcar Named Desire when it was at BAM some years back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also more recently Tom Buchanan in Baz Luhrmann's version of The Great Gatsby. Mm.
So if they give me a job, I'll turn up. Yeah, like Richard was a very different character. There's a real strength about him, and he's a very working class man, which I can relate to, but kind of the opposite of a lot of the characters I've played, in that he is 100% honest and wears his heart on his sleeve. And like, I've never played anybody, I think, who was so emasculated by the situation that he was in.
He's a proud man. A
very proud man, and I think it's a big engine for any man to want to provide and protect. And when that right is stripped away from a person, what are they left with? And that pride is seriously attacked. And I think Jeff's really kind of underlined that well in the screenplay. And this beautiful dance that happens between any two people in a really great relationship, and particularly Richard and Mildred, you see this sort of this constant movement and evolution of support for each other, an intuitive understanding of each other's needs. And I think, as the Grey Valette photo sums up very well, and the poster, it often is Richard being comforted and supported by Mildred, the real strength and forward-thinking member of that couple.
Ruth, how did you come to be born in Ethiopia and raised in Ireland? Just lucky?
My father was Ethiopian and my mother is Irish, and she worked as a nurse in the Black Lion Hospital in Addis, and my father was a doctor there.
Hmm. Well, you have done a lot of theater.
I have.
Are you enjoying doing film?
I am.
Jeff, you seem to keep making one movie after another. Do you have another one in the works?
Nothing specific yet. I'm writing multiple things at once. This is the first time, honestly, since after my first film, that I haven't known what's next. And I'm kind of enjoying that right now.
Although it is interesting that this is a film based on real events, and yet the name of the couple just seems so appropriate. It seems like only a fiction writer could have come up with the name Loving.
Honestly,
for this couple.
It was almost too on the nose. I kind of thought about that for a long time. But even though our film doesn't chart the court case specifically, you know, I did all this research into it, and I had to reclaim that word Loving.
It's a case that changed American law across the United States, a really important one, and one that people should know more about. It opens on this coming Friday at the Union Square Cinema and the AMC Lincoln Square. And my great thanks to Jeff Nichols, Joel Edgerton, and Ruth Negga for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.